Get your daily dose of family-strengthening encouragement anytime, anywhere with the new Focus on the Family broadcast app, featuring exclusive content and offline listening. Get it today at Google Play or the App Store.
Gina, I am your father, and I want you to open up this door immediately. We can talk about this like adults.
Go away, Dad! I don't want to talk to you! I don't want to have anything to do with you!
Well, they're adults now, but when my girls were teens, oh my word, I had moments like that. And you might have as well. You might have been on the outside of the door, unable to connect. Those are epic battles, and they are exhausting as you talk about rules and expectations. And the question is, how do you maintain a strong connection even in the midst of something like that? We're going to address that today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Yeah, John, the teen years can be a turbulent season for any family. Some have compared adolescents to floating down that lazy river, and they do everything you ask them to do, and it's so sweet. What a precious time we're in, honey, is kind of the conversation. And then kabam! All of a sudden, you hit the rapids.
The white rapids.
And you go, where did these come from? And that's called the teen years. And man, it can really catch a lot of parents by surprise because these kids are spreading their wings, wanting independence, doing things that maybe you're not approving of, and you know, the script plays itself out. Every family is different, of course, but common problems that we hear about here at Focus on the Family, man, it could be a communication breakdown, lots of conflict like you just heard in that opening, an underlying tension where every conversation is a struggle, and you're just trying to say, good morning, honey. Why do you say that to me like that? You know, all that stuff. It just goes on and on. And again, welcome to the rapids of teenhood. And believe me, we know the struggle. I hope you're catching that. Gene and I have dealt with this and in our own household with our two boys who are teenagers. And John, I think you've gone through it six times.
Yeah, we have survived five so far. We have,
good
I tell
you.
People, five of my kids are adults and one is a wannabe. He's only 16, but he'll get there eventually.
It's so true. So if you're living right now in those teen years, or maybe you know somebody who is, it might be your adult kids with your grandkids who are teenagers, whatever it might be, we're going to go over some nuts and bolts advice, a kind of parenting 101 for those teen years. Our guest is a mom who raised five of her own kids and has spent the last two decades working with teens. And I think she's going to have a lot of great ideas and insights for us.
And we are so happy to have Connie Albers here with us in the studio. She is a popular speaker and a writer, and she really wants to help families like yours and encourage parents like you. Connie has written a book that we're going to hear more about today called Parenting Beyond the Rules, Raising Teens with Confidence and Joy. And of course, we have that at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Connie, welcome to Focus on the Family.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be with you.
Are you kidding? We're desperate. We needed you.
Hey, in this culture, right?
It's really good to have you here, Connie. We've got 14 questions we want to ask you.
Well, we
first,
have a lot to talk about.
No kidding. But let's start with the title, Parenting Beyond the Rules. Okay, some are going, finally, that sounds so good. And then others, maybe some dads, what? How can you parent without rules?
Are good.
But you're not saying that.
That's
so
right.
Describe what you're saying there, parenting beyond the rules.
Right. You know, I do get that. Does that mean, Connie, that you don't have any rules?
I'm like, please,
no.
Because that would be a lot easier.
It's like, no, it's not that we don't have rules, limits, and boundaries. We do have rules, limits, and boundaries. However, the goal is to raise children who want to have a relationship with us.
Why do we miss that? We talk about that a lot on the program now. I think Christian households, when we have, I mean, PhD therapists in here, and we're talking about this, it's one thing to believe that. It's another thing to do it.
Yeah, living it out is hard. Part of it is control. I mean, when the children are younger, what do? We tell them exactly what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, how we're going to do it. But then all of a sudden, they don't want to do it like that anymore. You make them French toast for breakfast, their favorite meal, and they wake up and they go, I don't like French toast. You're like, but that's your favorite meal. I don't like it. And you're sitting there thinking, what is going on? I made your favorite thing. You're so ungrateful. And you end up into this power and control. And it's not about control. It's just about, I think you said it earlier, John, you said your wannabe 16-year-old. They want to grow up. And they're sometimes thrashing and flailing around, like you mentioned the whitewater. I just view it as, you know, everybody's in the boat and you're paddling as hard as you can. And some of them want to jump out and the others fall out. But we're still trying to reach them and throw them back in the boat
so that we
can get there.
Yeah, that's the
key. So that's the whole purpose, is I really want parents to have a relationship and realize that we make the rules, the limits, and the boundaries. We can adjust them.
Yeah, let me push on this a bit.
Okay.
That cheerleading comment is an interesting one to me. Is cheerleading freely given or is it earned?
Oh, absolutely not earned. It's freely given.
Okay, I just want to make sure parents are hearing that. Because temperaments play into this. Some parents are wired a different way. And you're going to get my cheers when you earn my cheers.
Otherwise, it feels artificial.
That becomes a very conditional environment that your kids all of a sudden learn, if I dance the right way, then mom and dad or mom or dad like me or love me.
And that the child that's given toward people-pleasing, those become the children that are easiest to raise because they know exactly what the standard is and they know what to say and how to say it. But the child who is more of your adventurer, your risk-taker, your leader...
Strong-willed,
I just think that's a future leader who just needs to be guided.
No, I agree with that.
And so when we think about how we're working with them in that capacity, I have to step back and say to the mom and dad, if you know why you're doing it and where you're going, which hence the vision casting, I tell parents that when you're sitting there and you're thinking about in your own mind, where are you trying to go? Like, I did not come from a great upbringing. So for me, I did not want to repeat history. It wasn't that I love my family. It's just that I knew there had to be a better way.
But hang on, because you had an awareness there. And some people with their childhood and the things they learn in their family of origin, there's not that awareness. And actually, they can tend to repeat the errors of their father.
That is true.
And so you're stricter, you're harsher, and that's what you learned growing up. So, I mean, this is a really important point. You have to break those generational sins.
You do.
And take them captive so you're not ending up in the same boat you were as a 13, 14-year-old.
Right.
Speak to that.
Well, when I write in the book, I talk about the different parenting styles. Back in the day, it used to be the permissive parent and the authoritative parent. Do as I say. And for those children that are real compliant children and they don't like getting in trouble. They'll do exactly what you tell them to do, and they think, I'm the favorite child. And sometimes they can kind of be that way just because they aren't causing you trouble. But the child who necessarily isn't doing that can unfortunately feel unloved because, going back to your comment about conditional love, you know, God loves us.
Yes.
Even while we are yet sinners, God still loves us. And therefore, we love our children. They are formed, fashioned, and created in His image. And He has given them to us to teach, train, and mold in the way they should go. So when we talk about breaking generational curse or the sin pattern, or my dad used to raise me like this, or my mom was like this, no, we have to say, you know what? God gave me to teach and train you in the way you should go. So that means I need to know who you are. But we can't do that unless we first know ourselves.
That's right. Proverbs 4:23 is important to you. Let's read it and then tell me why.
Yes, because, you know, Scripture says, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the spring of life, right? And that, if you go further in that passage, it does talk about how, while we were sinners, Christ loved us. When you are looking at what's coming out of your children, and I don't want to segue off this topic because it is the core of everything, as your child starts to grow and mature, we have to change and adjust. But sometimes we don't think we're allowed to do that. And I'm in the book, I'm giving parents permission. It's okay.
Okay, how did that work in your life where you were struggling with one of your kids? You don't have to name that child. I know that.
Well, as a mother
tough.
Of five, you can be assured there were struggles with each of them at different points along the way. And it kind of came back to some trial and error on my part. But then I started looking at, you know, God loves you. I need to love you. If I do a merit-based love and performance, then you're going to grow up thinking that's the way God is and that isn't how God is.
So how did that play out? Give me a specific example.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm pressing you.
You are pressing.
You're dodging the bullet.
I'm trying to think, which child do I talk about
with? Just think of one.
Okay, so with Paul, it got to be a point where with my oldest son, he had just turned 15. He was a compliant child. He made me think I was an amazing mother.
Of course.
And have y'all ever had those children?
That was our first.
I had one.
Yeah, just easy enough. Well, we're great parents.
Yeah, if you have that one first, you're in trouble.
Yeah. I know. That's
true. Number two or three or four is coming.
Number two wasn't like that.
Dun, 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 dun.
I stood in the hallway one day in tears saying, God, please help me love her. I mean, help me, you know, like understand her, because she was a real challenge because I'm not artistic. But I remember talking to my husband about this, and I said, he was pushing back, and he wanted to grow up to what you were saying, John. He just wanted to grow up, but I didn't know how to let that happen. And my husband said, you've got to get out of the way. You've got to step back and let God take over.
But what kind of response did you have to that comment?
I laid my head on the
pillow. Because all us guys are going, okay, I've done
that. Yeah, guys are. So I looked at my husband, and I said, true story. I said, you want me to get out of the way and let a holy God rain down on him to bring him back? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, I can't do that.
So what was your issue with that?
Yeah, why not?
Well, because God's a holy God. And when we cross a line and we know that God can really bring a lot on somebody to bring him back to himself, right? And I just laid my head on the pillow that night and I was just crying. And I said, Lord, get me out of the way so that I am not the obstacle to him hearing your voice. Because that's really what he needed.
That's powerful.
He needed to hear the voice of the Lord. And I promise, this happened in May, that particular year. It happened in May. I remember it. I can't even tell you how many pillowcases that were saturated with mascara because I would cry myself to sleep thinking I was ruining them. Or I would cry because of what I said that I shouldn't have said, or what I should have said that I was afraid to say because I was afraid I'd ruin them, or that maybe they would reject me, or maybe they wouldn't love me. But I remember so clearly, because 2 months later, at 1 a.m. in the morning, the phone rang, and he was calling his dad, and he was broken. Mm-hmm. And I just wept, and I realized sometimes we have to get out of the way, because God is trying to do a work in their life, and we can sometimes be a stumbling block to that.
I so appreciate that that epiphany that you had, and I think most of us as parents have to go through that time where we say, I've got to let go, I've got to get out of the way. Our guest on Focus on the Family today is Connie Albers, and she's written this great book, Parenting Beyond the Rules, Raising Teens with Confidence and Joy. It is possible to have both, and we want to encourage you to get a copy of the book and get a CD or a download of this broadcast so you can listen again. Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, or online you'll find these resources and more help at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Connie, in your book, Parenting Beyond the Rules, you mentioned the importance of listening. And you actually, this is really challenged me, because you said most parents score themselves much higher than they should when it comes to their listening skills. You know, oh yeah, I give myself an A. Mm-hmm. And your teenager probably give you a D or an F. So how do we get closer to reality and understanding where we might have a deficit?
Ask them.
Just ask.
Don't be afraid to ask them. And the answer that you might get from them is very different. And you've got to be receptive to what they say. And then you've got to take that internally, process that. And ask yourself some self-reflective questions. Am I listening to learn, or am I listening to correct? Am I listening just to kind of appease them? Am I fully present and engaged in hearing what they're saying? Am I looking past what the words they're saying so that I can hear the heart and the motive? Because unfortunately, teenagers, they're just not always very articulate at what's really going on inside of them.
Yeah, well, the parents' union in me is standing up. Let me represent all parents. And what they'll say is, what I feel sometimes is that, you know, I'm in it. I'm listening, but how was your day? Fine. How'd you do at school today? Great. How's your friendships? Good. I mean, it's that kind of thing.
I know, I hate those one-word answers.
Your ears are as big as, you know, any elephant. Mm-hmm. And yet you're not getting the conversation that you're hoping for.
Right. You know, a lot of that, if you know your child, like I am an extrovert. in a house of introverts. So I, you know, you can all empathize with me.
You must be really irritated.
At times, my children were not always appreciative of
Mom,
that.
Mom, stop talking to me.
I had one child. Now, this is fair. I can even say this on because it wasn't a mean comment, but she was in her 20s. And I am genuinely excited to see people. I love people and I love spending time with people. And she is more reserved. She's my artist.
One-on-one's good for her.
Yes, but a little bit, And I hopped in the car. It was 9 a.m. before she had coffee. And I was just bubbling because I, you know, she'd already been out on her own and I was ready to go. And she's like, Mom, I can only take so much right now. Can you just tone it down just for a little bit? And, you know, I could have had my feelings hurt and not talked to her for the rest of the day and shed a few tears. But I listened to what she was actually saying. She wasn't saying, I don't want to hear you, Mom. I don't want to talk to you. She was actually saying, can you just tone it down just a little bit? So, and the whole listening is probably, that one and Monitor Your Mouth are probably some of my favorite chapters.
Yeah.
Because I dive deep into that. You know, your children, they want to talk to somebody. I mean, if you have a teenager, look at their cell phone minutes, their data plan. You can see they're talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. Is it you? Oh, let it be you. And to answer your question, but you want to talk to them, then they're going, fine. I talk about how to ask the right questions at the right time. Are they preoccupied with something? Don't ask the one-word questions. We can do that to our spouse where our husbands come. For me, I'll ask my husband when he comes in, how was your day? Fine. How was your? How did you do it? Such and such. It went well. Well, that can happen just in normal conversation.
Sure.
But if we ask more specifics, and I give some of these in the book, I often say to parents, when you're going to ask questions and you want to get them talking, ask them questions that relate to their friends. Not just upfront, right? Just say, hey, I know your friend such and such was struggling in math. How are they doing? Or did your friends that were fighting, did they get that resolved? And they'll just blah, 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 tell you all about it, which is wonderful. Then you segue, right? Then you segue into how did you respond? Were you able to, you know, say anything to them? So asking the right questions at the right time, not in an affrontive, combative way. And I've also found, boy, when we're driving and our eyes are and we're looking at the road and they're next to us, and you ask those questions, they're more likely to answer you because they can't see your eyes dilate or constrict, and they can't see how your you know your face reacts, and you can't see theirs.
Yeah.
So those late evening times when they're going to bed and it's dimly lit in their room and you're asking them, you know, teens have this private world and they will only let those that they really trust that's safe to enter into that. And so that's why listening is so important. And we talk about being available. We have to be available. Let's face it, we are in an extremely busy society. All of us have multiple things going on. We have our own problems going on in our own lives. And we're distracted. We're trying to make the budget work. And we're trying to work out our insurance plan and figure out who needs braces and all of those things. But when we start to say, you know, listening is key to the heart. Once I have their heart, I have influence.
Well, and it's important, though. I want to jump in and clarify something because this to me is a
I can get going. Can you
well,
tell?
No, it's a profound statement, though, because you said the goal of listening is to learn about your teen, not what you can do for them.
Yeah.
The problem solving that we so quickly go to. That's really critical.
Can I share a story with
Absolutely.
You? I write about this in the book. I learned how important this was from one of my daughters. She loves to talk. And she would always talk with me. And I would notice that she would get frustrated with me more often as the time went on. And one day we were driving and I said something and she just got so upset. And she said, Mom, stop interrupting me. And I just stopped. And I said, I'm not interrupting you, sweetie. I'm just trying to get more information. And she goes, no, I don't want you to fix my problem. I just want you to listen. Boy, you better bet. From that moment on, I learned she just needed a sounding board. What we have to remember, Mom and Dad, is our children already know what we believe. They know our values. They know how we're going to respond. We know how the three-step plan of how we would fix
it. No. I need another lecture.
Yeah, right? My kids would say I was a world-class lecturer. I would tell them from 16 different perspectives because I wasn't quite sure which one they would understand. And
you keep going until they give you some sort of signal that, I got that.
Yeah, and as they get older, it's usually after the first one. It's like, got it, Mom. But you know, when we stop, and there are hindrances to getting your kids to talk to you, and that is if we're too busy. If we're too busy.
That's,
you know,
a good
our
one.
Children, I did not realize this when I was writing the book. My kids came in and told me one time, because I had to vet them. It is, you know, part of their story. And I don't talk about their fails. I talk about my mom fails. But they told me that they could always tell if it was a good time to talk to me by the way I was cutting carrots in the kitchen. Who knew?
I can so clearly see that. And I don't know you.
Apparently, if you're Crunch. Having a bad day.
My general rule of thumb is never argue with a woman holding a sharp knife.
Well, I'd say anybody, but that's so true.
So, you know, are you giving off the vibe that you're approachable,
yeah.
that you're available? Do they know that you're not immediately going to overreact or disapprove? That's so key. They want to know that what they want to say to you, you're going to hear it without the immediate reaction. And sometimes that, and I'll give you all a tip what I used to do, and we may end up having a lot of families like this, but when I was really trying to process something, I would just start humming. Because it kept me from speaking.
Oh, wow.
So they knew if Mom was humming, it's probably because she was processing something.
That's amazing.
Don't talk at them. They're just little adults in the process. Talk to them and with them. And the other one is, don't be so quick to correct. Ask them, how would you solve that?
And these are good tips that are all in the book.
Yes.
And I want people to get a copy, obviously. We've got a couple of minutes here. I want to mention something that is kind of in this same area, but I want to make sure we punch it, if I could say it that way, that parents need to squash their fear.
Mm.
Now, I think men and women may have a different perception as to what you mean. But
I would love to know. Tell me what you mean.
No, you go first.
Okay. We often get afraid that we're going to ruin them, that we're not doing enough, that our children are going to reject us, that our children are going to reject the Lord, that our children are going to listen to the peers more than us. And we're trying to figure out how do we do this without being confident and bold. And so that's why I say we've got to squash the fear, because God has given you these children to teach and train, as I mentioned earlier.
But what do we replace the fear with?
The
to
truth.
Help us get to that goal.
Okay, so we replace the fear with the truth. We squash out the doubt and the worry, and we replace the fact that we know we're working on building a relationship, and we know that we're communicating to our child that I am your greatest cheerleader, that you can trust me, that you belong in this family, that your identity is found in us and not in others. I mean, first in the Lord, but in our family units, this is where you fit. This is where we get you. Even though sometimes we don't get you, this is the safe place for you to thrash around and figure it out and not get it right. And so when we talk about fear, don't be afraid if your kids are going to hurt or harm your reputation. It's not about your reputation, and it's not about your children embarrassing you. They might. You're going for something bigger. This is just a season, and in a few short years, you're going to be out of the season.
Well, in fact, you had a powerful story about a young, successful man you met who experienced a lot of conflict with his parents in the teen years. What's his story?
That changed my parenting. That changed the trajectory of my parenting. It was so powerful. He was a very successful man, and he made several comments during a presentation I heard, and I went up to him, and I asked him more about this story, and he just said, "Everything I did was viewed as rebellion. My parents wanted me inside this nicely fit box of these were the rules, these are the limits, these are the boundaries." And he was an adventurer. He's a risk taker. He's a leader. He's an entrepreneur. And it didn't fit within their parameter. So every time he stepped out of that, he got smacked back. And I don't mean physically smacked back, but verbally, he would get pushed back. He would get in trouble. He would get grounded. He'd get privileges taken away. And basically, the spirit of who he was being squelched. Hmm. And the sad reality is he would try to explain, and it kind of goes back to listening. He would explain to him, "No, I'm not trying to do this. I'm just trying to be me. And I'm not you." And they wouldn't hear of it. And sadly, to this day, and this was many, many years ago, the relationship was so badly damaged because the parents were so concerned that he fit into the box that was constructed, that how their family was supposed to be. Like we would always say, we're the Albers family, and this is what we do.
Right. Man, have we heard that.
Right? And my kids to this day, they take pride in that. but not because everybody has to think and act and do the same thing. We celebrate the differences. And I do talk about this. And if I have a minute, how did I squash the fear? It's because I went to the child and I knew my artistic child is going to create beauty to the world in a way that only she can create it. And my son is an engineer. He's logical and sequential, and God has a unique path and purpose for his life. And when I started to embrace the person that they were, I let go of the fear.
No,
because
that's
ultimately
good.
Jim, they're God's kids.
Right.
Because the bottom line is your children are a masterpiece. And as a masterpiece, it takes different paint strokes and colors and brushes. And sometimes it doesn't look right. And you have to take a bigger brush stroke with a different color and paint over that. And that's forgiveness and unconditional love. And that's tempering the words that you say and monitoring your mouth so that the words that come out of your mouth land into a tender place of their heart.
That is so good.
And I said, when I looked at that book, and I thought, God is the architect. He's got a masterpiece. When we consult with him, we are able to paint the masterpiece that he has for them so that they can step into the next season of their life and honor and glorify the Lord.
Yeah. Man, Connie, this has been terrific. And I think every mom, certainly, and many dads just heard that story and went, yes, that is the goal. And in some ways, they probably struggle to try to do that well every day. But this is a wonderful resource, Parenting Beyond the Rules, to give you the insights and the direction to do it as best as you can. And we want to get it into your hands. And as we often say, for a gift of any amount, a monthly pledge or a one-time gift. And if you can't afford it, we'll trust that others will cover the cost of that. Contact us here at Focus on the Family to get your copy so that we can achieve our mission, which is to make you the best parent you can be in Christ. And that is the goal, because we want your kids to thrive. We want you to thrive. We need healthy Christians to be doing life well. And we believe that Connie has touched on something here that will really benefit you today.
Donate and get your copy of Parenting Beyond the Rules when you call 800, the letter A and the word family, 800-232-6459, or online at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. I might mention we do have an online parenting survey. It's free. It'll help you see some strengths that you have as a mom or a dad, and maybe some areas to grow in as well. Again, the website is focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Connie, thanks again for being with us today at Focus on the Family.
Thank you for having me, Jim and John. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening today. We hope that you have a good weekend with your family and with your church family as well. And on Monday, we're going to be featuring a stirring pro-life message from Johnny Erickson Tata.
No, we need to preserve the God-blessed dignity of a child like Jillian and not conform her to society's norms, but change this. How about we change society?
That's next time on Focus on the Family. And remember, when you get in touch, let us know how you're listening on our website, through our mobile app, or on our podcast feed. I'm John Fuller, and on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, join us next time as we help you and your family thrive. Nothing warms your heart like reflecting on your love story. I'm John Fuller, inviting you to join me and Greg and Aaron Smalley for the Loving Well podcast. Whether you've been married for decades or you're just planning your wedding, listen in to this fun and practical series to help build a godly relationship and celebrate your romantic journey. Learn more at focusonthefamily.com/lovingwell. That's focusonthefamily.com/lovingwell.